Well, tonight, the predictions for 2012. John Hoag joins us on Coast to Coast AM. One of our favorite guests here on Coast to Coast AM, John Hoag. He writes on subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, and, of course, prophecy. Considered a world authority on Nostradamus, he is a best-selling author. He has published in a number of languages, and he has appeared on media outlets all over the planet. Welcome back to Coast to Coast, John Hoag. John, how are you?
It's great to be back, George.
Pleasure. Looking forward to a full show with you tonight. So I'm getting emails from people who have waited up for nights knowing you were going to be on.
Yeah, they're coming through at hoagprophecy.com, too.
What's new with you?
Well, I'm recovering from having to write an almanac that I do every year, these predictions almanacs, and usually they're electronic books, e-books. I've been doing them since 2007 and 2008, and they usually come through my fingertips about 36,000 words, so I give myself 6 weeks to write them. I usually get them out around the solstice of the winter time. Well, this one came out as a 64,000-word monster.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was writing around the clock, and there's also design and editing and all the other things, and then making all the buttons work, and so that it can go out since it's an electronic book. And I'm recovering.
Well, you're an expert on Nostradamus, but these predictions that we talk about on the program, these are yours, right?
Pretty much they are. I mean, it's one of the things I've often said as a scholar of prophecy is it's not enough just to be an expert standing off on the side. It's just like somebody who's an expert on hydro sciences on water and who's never gotten wet. This is a subjective subject, the subject of foreseeing the future. And I believe that to be authoritative on the subject, you have to have one foot solidly in the study, the empirical study of it, and you have to also have the existential experience.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the things looking forward to 2012. By the way, an M9 flare is headed this way. It's supposed to hit Tuesday morning. Here we go, John. It's sun time, isn't it?
It's sun time. And the living isn't easy, to coin a phrase from Gershwin. The fish are boiling, and the cotton is also desiccating in Texas.
Yeah.
It's just, and then you're seeing the very strange things that are happening in the weather.
God, it's unbelievable.
It just accelerates and accelerates. I mean, in my previous book, Prediction for 2011, I always try to find a theme for each year, and the theme I had for last year was alarm bells sounding the unsustainable. I was saying there was going to be issues with food sustainability, food prices rising because of weather damage, that it might cause destabilizations and potential revolutions. Well, we had the Arab Spring was often motivated by the fact that people were having to spend 40% of their income just to feed their family in Tunisia and Egypt and other places. So on top of the sincere need to try to have freedom and democracy, a lot of revolutions are motivated by the most visceral and basic needs. So that happened. That was because of the great drought that hit Russia, that took Russia out of the wheat market. So I think the fifth largest wheat exporter in the world suddenly can only contain the wheat that it needs to save its livestock industry and its own people.
Oh, geez.
So, but when that happens, you create a shortfall in the food. Now, that extreme weather the following year hits America with the amazing drought that hit Texas, Oklahoma, and the Southwest, especially Texas. 40 days in Dallas-Fort Worth of triple-digit Fahrenheit temperatures. It's something we've said a lot on this show, and it's been accelerating actually ever since I've been on Coast to Coast since 1998, 1999. There's been an acceleration, climate change, climate shifting. And, I'll say it again, as I said it before, is that how many 500-year droughts, how many 1,000-year floods, how many 100-year this or that do you need before you realize that something is being triggered? And certainly in a more esoteric point of view, many mystics around the world will tell you that there's interconnectivity to what's going on. The disharmony of the human race is also being expressed as a disharmony in the world, a disharmony in the sun, the solar system. There will be some who will theorize that isn't it interesting that you see a lot of UFOs when human beings start creating atomic weapons? Or you're seeing a lot of UFOs now because humanity is in a crisis. Mm-hmm. It's perhaps because we're interconnected to other dimensions and other worlds, even beyond our little localized issue.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, they may very well be aware of our torment here, and they're either monitoring or they want to help.
Or they're wanting to learn perhaps how they seeing it reviewed again, how mm-hmm. they can get through it, how a civilization, Ifadikaku on Muchikaku, I don't think I'm pronouncing his name correctly.
Michikaku. Yeah, you're good. You're close.
Yeah, I was close. He's one that's theorized that civilizations have a certain point that most of them don't get past. To before they move from a national to a global, to an intergalactic stages. We're now moving through the shift of the national to the global. Like it or not, we are becoming a global society, and we have issues now that impact whatever anybody does impacts everybody else. I mean, if one gunboat in the Strait of Hormuz hits a U.S. ship with a shell or vice versa, everyone listening to this show and everyone not listening to the show will see their oil rise, and that will affect the entire economic world. So we are engaged more than ever before, but we're still, like so much so often happens, is we try to tackle these new revolutionary times with what we know, which is out of date.
Let's talk about 2012. I mean, here we are in this very strange year, but you call it the oh my God year. How come?
Yes, actually, I cleaned it up for the show. If anybody's read the book, you know I said something much worse.
Yes.
But you get the point. It's that idea of finding a theme for a year. And, you know, I look at 2012, and you have alarm bells that start sounding about sustainability issues for the civilization, which brings pressure literally into the streets, from Wall Street to the streets of Damascus, to Tahrir Square, that where people are, they don't quite know how to fix it. They are not very coherent. They don't have a focus, but there's a feeling that something's hitting the fan in our world, and it's this feeling that I get it constantly from many people. This feeling of there's something collectively going on that's kind of freaking people out underneath the conscious day to day life. It's almost like it's more than alarm now. It's like a gasp. It's like something's really got to change. And so I see this year as a collision, an oh my God year, because it's going to be literally a collision of two kinds of humanity. The humanity that can only see and affect change from what it knows and what it traditionally does, which is out of step with what's coming. And another humanity that may not yet have a tradition, may not yet have grasped or articulated what needs to happen, but they're definitely on the streets. They're definitely out there questioning like an innocent child. They're definitely saying the emperor has no clothes.
That's right.
And these two forces are colliding. And you will see it, especially in the June and July of this year, with a continuing evolution of mass social protest that has been aided by the internet and Facebook and other things. And the other thing, too, is that we've made this an oh my God year, not really because the Mayans had put that much emphasis on this year. They actually didn't. We can get into that a little later. But we are certainly. putting tremendous emphasis. People all over the world have made this year a deadline year for so many things. I mean, you could also call it not just an oh my God year, but oh my God, it's a year with a deadline that ends the Kyoto Protocol, which is the attempt to control greenhouse gas emissions. That protocol runs out at the end of this year. There are a number of social programs in the U.S. government, Clean Water Act, EPA Act, things, mine protection, labor laws, that could end at the end of this year. You have a U.S. president who could face an end to his political career.
Or not.
Or not. Or not. You could see also a Tea Party movement losing its significance this year if it doesn't break through. You know, there's a lot of things coming to a head.
I want to point out that the things you're going to hear from John Hoke tonight in terms of his predictions aren't necessarily his personal views, what he likes, what he doesn't like. These are his thoughts of the predictions. I got a few emails from people, John, who've looked at some of your past, and they said, well, how can he say that? How can he believe that? And like I say, these are predictions. They're not necessarily personal stands on issues. And it's so important to let people know that.
You know, one of the occupational hazards of having accurate track records or making bold predictions is that you will always upset half of the people half of the time,
yeah,
and the other half a little later. you know, I've been making presidential predictions since 1968 that documented 11-0 accuracy in the popular vote. Now, for all my Republican friends out there, that means I predicted 7 Republicans out of 11 becoming president of the United States.
Whether you wanted them in or not.
Yes. And so when I make a prediction like I have early on your show about Barack Obama being a 2-term president, I would just say to the readers that freak out, just look at my record. 7 out of 11 for Republicans. So if you are wishing to have a Republican in office, just understand that that's the prediction. Now, if you also read my books, you'll know that I also describe ways in which those futures can be changed, including how the Republicans can win in 2012. And I've said it again on your show, and I find it very interesting with what's going on of late in the Republican primaries after South Carolina, that rumblings are out there to pressure men like the former governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, to run.
That's right. That's right.
And I have said constantly that the Republicans are not placing the man who can beat Obama into the race in any of these candidates. And that I've been saying that man is that who has the best chance of beating Barack Obama is Jeb Bush.
Yeah, you've always said that.
Yeah. Now I've also, and I think it's important to be fair, I had a big oops in prophecy just recently.
Tell me the oops.
Yeah, the oops was that, back in June, I said that Rick Perry was going to get into the race and he was going to make a big splash. And that was 2 months before he actually got into the race.
But he did get into the race, and he did make a big splash. He
did make a big splash, but the mistake was I said that he, because of the way it would happen, is Romney and him would be the last two standing, and then he would win. That was the prediction I made. Which
okay, that's
I'm very
true.
Happy to say, was completely wrong. Oops.
It was an oops.
But
why was it an oops? What happened?
Well, It's something I like to do, and it's going to upset some people, but again, I just have to use my record for the presidential elections. My oracle work, it seems to be very good at picking winners, but my oracular work is not so good at picking the losers. And, you know, it's almost like the energy that I do in these predictions, it's almost like if it had a voice, it would say, why are you bothering me with that when I'm telling you who's going to win? Why do you have to bring up the superfluous of who is going to lose? Now, you know, that's We may be sitting here on November 6th, and I'll have a whole lot of egg on my face, and maybe I'll be wrong. But, I'm not afraid to be wrong. And one of the things that I try to do in my HokeProphecy.com since 1999 is provide every article that I've written, and certainly produce for people to download every book that I've written as an electronic book since then. It's approaching 19 books now. And you can see where I get it right and get it wrong, and then assess how prophetic bias sometimes gets in the way, or also how sometimes we enact change. I mean, I open predictions for 2012, talking quite upfront about the issue of me being someone who speaks to millions of people. When I make an interpretation or a prediction, I'm already affecting the change.
Yes, you are. That's true.
Yeah. There's probably a whole lot of people out there are now thinking, how can we beat Barack Obama because of this idiot on your show? but there's also a lot of people saying, how can we make that future happen?
Would you change, if you see things changing, events changing, as we get up to November of this year, would you change that prediction, or could you change that prediction, or is it etched in stone?
Nothing is etched in stone.
Okay.
One of the great revelations that I've had studying prophecy for 30 years is that it only appears sometimes to be written in stone because we're so stony about our habits and following them blindly. And that our societies make us follow our habits blindly. And that's why history is repeated again and again. So one of the best examples I can give you of how a certain prophecy can be changed something that develops is what happened to Hillary Clinton, where I predicted she would be president. But a year before 2008, I recognized a weak link in that prophecy, and that is that she didn't explain her vote to go to Iraq, to invade Iraq, being one of the senators that voted for it. She would upset the anti-war faction in the Democratic Party, and what I anticipated, and it's written in March in 2007, HokeProphecy.com, the whole, it's called Hillary Clinton's Albatross, where I described how she would, the one thing that could keep her from her destiny would be that she doesn't explain that well in a tight race, which I believe would be with Barack Obama, and that the anti-war faction would be just enough for her to lose against him in the primaries. And that's what happened.
John, then I want to talk about... Go ahead.
So if we have time, I can wait until the ad.
We've got about a minute here. Go ahead.
Okay. So I'm looking for what might be the missing link, and I think I might have found it. It's called the 1% factor.
And what is that?
If Barack Obama can take a claim, whether it's true or not, to have brought the monthly unemployment down another percentile point by November or October, he will have done what Ronald Reagan did in 1984, also during a bad recession, not as bad as this, but bad. And Ronald Reagan had a landslide. I don't think Barack Obama is going to have a landslide in this election. I think the popular vote may be somewhere around 8% again, like it was in 2008.
All depends on what states you take, I guess. That's what it's going to come down to again, isn't it?
Well, and also is the perception of, if there's a perception that he's more adult, if there's a perception that he is actually bringing the economy slowly forward, and if Europe doesn't drag our economy down, which is going to have a major crisis, Europe, in the banking system this year in the summer, if he's seen as somebody who can bring that unemployment down another percentile from where it is now, then he will win. But if it goes up to 10.5, it will be the Republican.
We'll be back with more with John Hoag. Plus, we're going to talk about his thoughts of last year being the year of 12 catastrophes. What did he mean by that? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we're talking to the prophecy expert tonight, John Hoag. His website, HoagProphecy.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. Let's find out what he meant for 12 catastrophes of 2011 when we come right back. And welcome back with John Hoag. John, each year you give a theme to that specific year. In 2011, you called it the year of 12 catastrophes. Now, I haven't counted them all. But I bet we got pretty close to that. What happened?
Well, there are two trains of thought. I'll just go for it. There's the catastrophes in the United States and the catastrophes in the world. Let's just quickly go through the list. Around January and early February, so roughly within that lunar cycle, if you think of months meaning from the root moon month, you had Queensland, Australia, hit by one of the most powerful cyclones they've ever recorded, 200,000 people displaced, which is quite a lot of people if you've ever been to Queensland like I have. It's a big, vast place and sparsely populated. Major floods through Brisbane. So the monsoon flow also went all the way down into the state of Victoria, which would be, I think it would be comparable to having a monsoon flood go all the way into Minnesota, if you were looking at the northern hemisphere. So February, you have a catastrophe of a different kind, a catastrophe if you're a dictator. You have dictatorships collapsing in Tunisia, or beginning the state of collapse that would happen. The revolutions of the Arab Spring hit Mubarak's dictatorship, threaten Bashar al-Assad in Syria, take down the dictatorship of Tunisia, and even at this very day, Saleh, who is the head of the strongman of Yemen, is finally leaving.
He's going, yeah.
That all began around February. So second catastrophe is a catastrophe for dictatorships. Third catastrophe is pretty easy in March to look at. That's the Tohoku quake of Japan, the 9.0 earthquake, greatest earthquake in Japanese recorded history, the worst disaster since World War II.
Horrible situation.
And the great tsunami that rocked that area. Unfortunately, I also said in predictions for 2011 that there would be another great tsunami in the Pacific Ocean. But I also said the Indian as well, and that didn't happen, so I'm happy to say that didn't happen. But the Pacific one did. Now we go to disaster number four. Tornadoes. Outbreaks in April that from what was a very quiet tornado season in the United States suddenly became, in the case of April, the single most devastating tornado outbreaks in a month in recorded U.S. history, with hundreds of people killed.
Well, Joplin, Missouri one? Horrible.
And all across the tornadoes that hit Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia and Tennessee and North Carolina, but especially Alabama. And how ironic it is, and my prayers go out to many of my readers in Alabama, because they've just been hit again in the same areas. I had a lot of my readers firsthand give me firsthand reports of the supercell tornadoes that went through it last April that just missed their houses. It's a strange development that Hoag prophecy now is becoming so read all over the world that I now have a much more of a connection with the people that are definitely getting impacted by all these changes and upheaval.
You're the modern-day Nostradamus, John. You really are.
Yeah, I look more like Brahms, but...
I don't know. The first time I met you, I thought I was looking at Nostradamus.
Well, I'm a sinner, then. Nostradamus was a thin man. I'm not such a thin man, so... I'm more like if Nostradamus had Orson Welles as a father, then... look more like that. But anyway, now we get into May. So we've had four catastrophes. We go into May, and we have a massive flood in the Mississippi River Delta river system. So that's May. You then have the Missouri River floods in June, although you could fight with that, and I think Joplin was, I can't remember if Joplin hit in May. The worst, one of the worst single tornado events as far as the death toll and destruction.
It's horrible.
Yeah, and so if you have a tug of war in May and June between two great floods, the Mississippi River system, then followed by the Missouri River system.
It was in May, by the way.
Joplin, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So now we move to something that was developing already, but really hits hard. And this would be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We're getting the seventh disaster, which is in July, and that's the drought in Texas. $5 billion lost in agriculture, livestock industry threatened, huge loss in the wheat industry through that region. To match the 200,000 acres or so of farmland that was flooded in the Missouri and Mississippi catastrophes. So that's the 7th. August, we now move to a catastrophe, which is a catastrophe of credibility and economy. We're talking about how August began with the U.S. losing its credit rating because of the U.S. debt ceiling debate, which took the country and the government almost into default, which very much shook the credibility of the U.S. economy at that time. So that is now an economic disaster or catastrophe, and that would be August. You could also argue that since the drought is continuing in Texas, that's also part of it too. We get into September, and now we have one of the top 10 most expensive disasters ever hit the United States, and that was Tropical Storm Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And what we see again and again with the climate change is that tropical storms, not even hurricanes, but tropical storms, or just the basic monsoon flow of rain, is stronger and more intense than before.
Well, and they're economic monsters.
And that gets to a couple other catastrophes down the list here. As we're looking at catastrophe number 9, that also happened when Typhoon Roke hit Sendai in the same area that was devastated by the earthquake in Japan. But Tropical Storm Lee cost billions of dollars from the damage that it did, even though New Yorkers thought it was a big buildup for nothing, along the Long Island shore, New Jersey, into Pennsylvania, and especially in Vermont. Historic floods from the rain that was unleashed by Lee. Now, we go into October. The 10th catastrophe is actually the monsoon fury that hit, you know, in 2011, and it's a pattern that's continuing in 2012. I started talking about one thing that's unsustainable, and that is some countries will not be able to sustain their ability to survive because of being hit again and again by major monsoons or tropical storms or typhoons or cyclones. And I said in that prediction that you would see the monsoon track hit Philippines very hard, Vietnam, and Thailand, and that a new set of climate developments are happening where year after year you're going to see countries in the developing world hit by such hard hurricanes and storms that it knocks them down. The countries fall not from an invader, not from any hand of man directly, but from the climate itself. We look at 3 major typhoons have hit the Philippines. 2 of them hit within 4 days of each other, the island of Luzon.
Do you think any are man-made, John?
I know there's a lot of people who think that HARP mm-hmm. is the cause of this. You know, to think that and is one thing, but to ignore the mountainous evidence of that shows clearly that with the industrial age came an increase of our climate, a slight rising of the oceans that is steadily growing and growing. The evidence in science is irrefutable that we are having an impact on our climate. And one of the things that makes this an oh my God year is the revelation that's going to come more and more in the summer that science is going to produce in 2012 is that we are running a debt of carbon that we throw into the bank, which is called our atmosphere. And we are right now around 390 parts per million of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. We have 5 years before we max that fund of air, clean air, out when we reach 450 parts per million. When that happens, and by 2018, we're not going to be talking about how we can restore balance to the climate. We're going to need to start talking about how do we sustain our civilization into an unknown future, which may lead to fire or ice. The thing about tripping and cascading the climate is, in prophecy at least, there are two equal schools in visions about the future that see a future of runaway global warming, where we have an atmosphere as hot as the Jurassic period by the end of the century, and the dinosaur period, where the poles, the polar caps disappear and the oceans rise a couple hundred feet. Or we have these very things that are putting all this ice into the ocean waters, desalinizing the great ocean currents and actually triggering something like a sudden ice age.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
So that's one of the things we're dealing with. So October was the 10th disaster. And what we saw is a huge amount of monsoon floods around the world that were unique in the devastation. Now we get to November, and the continuation of that is what happened in Thailand, in Bangkok, where a third of the country was underwater. They expect that a third of the gross national product will be eliminated by this single flood. Now, what happens if this, which I call the 11th catastrophe in the world, what happens if Thailand gets hit every year like that? If it loses a third every year, it's got 3 years of floods before Thailand cannot sustain itself. You have in Pakistan, last year, 25 million people were displaced when the monsoon floods down the Indus River flooded the entire Sindh Plain.
I bet they're still living in squalor.
Well, it happened again. It's not even being reported. There was a simple, astronomically, it looked like from space, from a satellite picture, it looked just like a normal monsoon pulse that went over the South Sindh Valley plains. But it dumped an amazing amount of rain in a short period of time that flooded the area, and another 9 million people lost their homes and the cotton crop. Now, Pakistan is very unstable. It is probably going to fall back into a military dictatorship this year. It is a country that is spending most of its excess funds to build by 2021 another 200 nuclear weapons. It now has 100. It'll have 300 by the end of this decade, and it's unstable. And if it gets hit by a few more monsoons like this, in last year, it was because of the economic help from the United States that the Pakistani economy didn't collapse. We're now looking at situations that I talked about in the early 90s. The CIA talked about it 12, 13 years later, the issue of climate change or climate wars.
Yep, and wars for water, wars for everything like that.
Food and things like that.
Yep.
So that was number 11. Number 12 was that third typhoon. Well, it was a tropical storm, actually. It hit Mindanao, which is on the other end of the archipelago of Philippines, a large mountainous island, where 1,500 people were drowned, 200,000 people were made homeless, and 100,000 more, the infrastructure was so devastated that they had to be evacuated from the area. And that hardly even gets reported now, because the more corporately organized news in America, it seems to make it, we're becoming very isolationist in our views here, but there's major things happening. So that's the one thing. That's the one trend of thought about the 12 catastrophes. The other I found very interesting, at the end of last year, they reported that the U.S., and this was from Time magazine, the U.S. experienced a record 12 weather disasters, each costing over $1 billion in the year 2011.
Well, now, couldn't some of these catastrophes also be social catastrophes, like the Arab unrest, like the economic problems? Could you look at it that way?
Well, actually, my own, if I have a bias towards it, I get a prediction. I then have to interpret it through my own mind and my own programmed conditioning, my own biases. I mean, this is the process everybody who gets a prophecy has to do, whether they're predicting the NFL or they're Joan of Arc finding a sword in the grass, or, you know, you're Nostradamus staring at a bowl of water. You have to then take whatever you saw, whether it's a figment of your imagination or not, and interpret it. And for me, my bias tends to be expand and broaden the view of what is catastrophe. And, you know, one man's catastrophe could be another man's blessing, as in the Arab Spring, for now.
That's right.
Although the Islamist parties actually won 50% of the parliamentary seats in Egypt. It's important to understand, and that just happened. And today there was a movie, a film in Egypt of the initial session. Everybody's yelling, everybody's talking. So anyway, they're democracy at best is a messy affair.
Could it happen here and beyond Occupy Wall Street? I mean, truly an uprising.
Isn't it interesting that the oldest lasting civilization or nation that has lasted and remained a nation, Egypt, 5,000 years old, is sharing with the world a way by people going into Tahrir Square in Cairo, gave the world a whole new idea that has not been seen in street revolutions since 1848, 1849, the 19th century, a regional spreading idea of popular movements in the streets. It started in the Arab Spring, especially in Egypt. Spread then to even China. It doesn't get reported a lot, but millions of people got involved in China.
Well, in Russia now, too.
And Russia, too. I talk about on the website some of the other predictions that are not in the book. I talk about how Vladimir Putin's going to have to deal with this neo-czar of Russia, has to deal with a potential new Russian revolution in the coming years, which is growing in the Russian Federation.
Well, and he said today the Russian Federation could collapse if this continues. Is this guy a strong arm enough to send troops out there?
Well, isn't it funny how history repeats itself?
Mm-hmm.
I hear a Russian leader saying, I'm going to deal with this with a heavy czarist hand. And Tsar Nicholas did that.
Look what happened to him.
And it didn't work. There are some people that spray pepper spray in the faces of people sitting on the ground, and they just don't seem to understand that heavy-handed actions from overstuffed police tends to make things worse.
Stay with us, John. We're going to take this break. We will come right back, talk more about can a Arab Spring happen here in the United States? Plus, we'll also get John's take on 2012. December 21st is not that far away.